But I want you to know that I start with some certain, with a few certain assumptions about debate. One is that debate is the art of persuasion. It is the art of persuasion. And that means that the judge sitting in the back of the room is the person that you are attempting to persuade. You do not necessarily persuade them because they have all power, because they have a ballot, although that is true. And for some of you, that is all important. For most of you, your opponent's impression of you is more important than the judge's. I've always found this to be an interesting phenomenon in debate. But I also know that for purposes of both impressing the opponent and impressing the judge, credibility is terribly important. And I wanted to stop for 1 second on credibility before we go straight into cross-examination and purposes of that. And I want to give you 2 sources that I use for this lecture. I love cross-examination. And I think it is a terribly important and powerful part of the debate activity. One of the sources I use is Gifford Blyden, who is was the longtime director of forensics at the University of Kentucky. And he wrote some really wonderful stuff on cross-examination. My more primary source, and the one I admire the most, is Judge Younger, who was a New York Supreme Court justice for a long time. He died recently. He is pretty much traditional required learning in all law schools. And one of the things about Judge Younger that I love, aside from the fact that you can remember everything he said because his examples are incredibly profane, I have never been able to just show a tape of him in the high school setting for obvious reasons. But he made a statement that I found profound because I agreed with him from the perspective of being a debate coach for about 2,000 years. And he said that in his 30 years on the bench, he only heard 5 attorneys who could use cross-examination effectively. 30 years on the bench, a New York Supreme Court justice, and he only heard 5 attorneys who could use cross-examination effectively. In my 2,000-plus years of judging college debate, I would argue that I probably have only heard about 5 college debaters who I thought knew how to use cross-examination effectively and who did not consider it prep time. Now, prep time is prep time. It's a good thing. You should use it and use it efficiently. The cross-examination has a whole lot of other functions, and I encourage you to find it. I think that one of the most important purposes of cross-examination, I'm going to get into the textbook purposes of cross-examination for a minute, but to me, the number one utility-laden purpose of cross-examination is to establish your credibility. It is to establish your credibility. And credibility, Aristotle says, is critical to persuasion. Ethos is critical to persuasion. Now, there have been studies done for the last 50 years in communications and other academic disciplines that suggest that the people who have the lowest credibility as public speakers are the following: women, people of color, teenage males, and people with strong regional dialects. Well, that pretty much covers this room. You have the credibility of fleas. So we're going to try to do something about that. Let me tell you something else. The best speaker you ever hear in your life, you will only retain about half of it. Best speaker, best lecture you ever hear, you will only retain about half of it. Why? Well, there are a lot of reasons. Our minds wander. Well, this could be better tonight. Has the person on row 3 noticed me yet? Am I going to have more than a debate experience here at the Institute? There have been studies that suggested about, now this is a wonderful statistic, studies that suggest that about 80% of males between the ages of 12 and 21, I would argue it goes much higher, have a sexual fantasy about every 26 seconds. Now, women, while you're enjoying this, you have them about every minute and a half. We could draw some conclusions about this, but I will resist. We're not going there today. Do you ever wonder why teachers and preachers and lawyers in front of juries repeat things three times? Because you've got to get in those little windows and try to get ideas to what they're trying. The main purposes of cross-examination was to try to in some way refresh your sexual fantasy. Okay, we've got to establish credibility. Credibility is difficult. We start with word credibility in some profound way. And when we have cranky judges in the back of the room who have driven vans hundreds of hours and gotten you up and on the buses and fed and whatever, and they're in round four in a particular day, they are cranky. They are not happy, and they would like to see you in some ways as their debaters if they are college coaches who have driven them crazy all day. And so we've got to do something with credibility. Second purpose of cross-examination, and now we're into the academic part, is clarify information. Clarify information. If you didn't understand it, if you didn't hear it, you need to clarify it. If you don't bother to stop and do that, you're going to be messed up if you start pitching your tent on particular arguments that you don't understand. Clarify information if you didn't understand it. If they read it at 200 miles an hour, hello, take it as they're reading it and read it. But clarify information not just for yourself but for the judge. Folks, judges don't have cross-ex. We don't get prep time. We can't say, can I see the first affirmative right after it's read? It's just not done. Judges are supposed to sit as though that they can hear 250 words a minute and transcribe it perfectly on the flow sheet. Please know that judges cannot do that. Please know that you concentrate harder than anyone anywhere in the academy. You have a direct incentive not to look stupid. If you don't hang on the every word of your opponent and the every word of your colleague, you can say something bad. You've got to concentrate. Your life in that debate depends on it. The judge does not have that. And the judge, unfortunately, a lot of times at the end of the debate has to sit and read evidence and reconstruct the round. A lot refuse to do so. For either kind of judge, you have to be clear wherever possible to establish the credibility of your argument. If you didn't hear what they said, clarify information. Second purpose of cross-examination is to lay the groundwork for refutation. Lay the groundwork for refutation. What arguments are you going to build? What links do you need to have established? What positions and concessions do you need clarified for both the judge and your own argument purposes? Number three, versus clarifying information, second, laying the groundwork for refutation, third, discovery of the witness's knowledge. Can they defend what they have to say? Do they know what they're talking about? Did they slap this together in the first week of a workshop so that in week two of the Institute, they have no idea what they're talking about? And how can you exploit that in cross-examination? Those are general purposes. What I would like to do for the rest of the lecture, are you holding your hand up? Okay. Number three is discovery of the witness's knowledge. Now, I can't see because these lights are shining in my face, and I'm going to try, if you have questions of clarification like she did, I want you to ask them. If not, I want you to write them down, and I'll sit here as long as we need to after it's over. But some folks need to maintain their figures like I do on a regular basis, and food is important to them. I would rather stay afterwards with those of you who have burning questions on cross-examination, but if you don't understand something, raise your hand, and if I don't see you because of these lights, holler. Okay, I can still hear, despite my vanity age. Okay, what I want to do for the rest of the time is go through a list of suggestions to the questioner and suggestions to the witness to help you maximize those positions. In debate, everyone is a questioner and everyone is a witness. And we're going to try to maximize that so that one partner is not doing all the speaking and all the cross-examination, period. Suggestion number one to the questioner, for the questioner. This is absolutely the most important thing I have to say, is if you hear nothing else, please hear this suggestion. Don't go into cross-examination with the aim of forcing your opponent to concede. Don't go into cross-examination with the aim of forcing your opponent to concede. But Melissa, we have watched television low these many years, and we love that part. Where the lawyer gets the witness, and it's just so much fun because you see the questioner has the psychological advantage. They know the questions they're going to ask. The witness is on the hot seat. I assume you all live with some adult or have grown up with some adult figures in your younger lives, parents, guardians, whatever. The point is, when you come in and they're not up and you're past curfew and you're 15 and you're not sure if they know or not, and you come down to breakfast and they go, "So, what time did you get in last night, son?" See, you don't know what they know, do you? You don't know how you're supposed to answer that question. Now, if you're truthful and tell them you broke curfew, you might or might not get in more trouble than if you lie and tell them that you didn't. Because you see, you don't know what they know. And so the witness is in the psychologically inferior position in this confrontation. The questioner has the advantage. Don't exploit that advantage inappropriately. Don't go into it with the aim of forcing your opponent to concede. Now, let's talk about a dirty little truth about debate. You are all egomaniacs. You would not be here if you were not. Please think about what you're attempting to do. You think that you can go to the library and crush anyone else in a debate round based on your intellectual superiority, your work ethic, etc., ad nauseum. You think that you can compete in the Olympics of mental gymnastics. This is not someone with a small ego. This is not someone who thought the band was better activity. This is someone who believes that they are intellectually capable. Now, don't hear this wrong. I think ego is a great thing. What else will motivate you to go to the library and spend 20 hours a week working on an activity that takes a quarter of the time to pursue as the preparation for it takes? To go to the library and run screaming into a classroom where the other debate folks are, "Guess how many people died last week because of this? Isn't that great?" Take activity to the outside world, let me tell you. I've had more than one professor at Emory come to me and go, "What kind of ill people are part of this? And why are you encouraging it? And why can't we understand it if they scream happily about death and destruction?" Did you know that nuclear war is frightening to most people? But see, the same ego that drives you to succeed will buffalo you in a couple of ways. The way it will buffalo you, number one, is when you lose, it's somebody else's fault. You see, it's your partner's fault, it's the judge's fault, it's your coach's fault. I have to debate that in person. Someone had to do it. It was so sad. They had to break down. I don't know how I can hardly deal with it. It was just terrible. And what we want to do in debate to compensate for the fact that we have all of these actors in the debate world working against us, is we just want in cross-examination, we have this sweet little dream that we're going to stand up and ask a series of questions so profound, so devastating, so intellectually powerful and brilliant that our opponent is going to descend to the floor in a quivering mass and go, "I can't deal with all the superiority. I'll have to leave the room now, please. I can't even be in your presence." Okay, now, realistically, this is not going to happen. You know why? Because the people you're debating against are egomaniacs too. And they would rather lie. Okay, don't go into it with the aim of forcing your opponent to concede. Go into it with the aim of building your own credibility and that of your partner. Underline, and that of your partner. Suggestion number two, ask questions. Great, we've got a rocket science since you're here. Ask questions, don't make speeches. Ask questions, don't make speeches. So many of you waste the opportunity of asking questions. Well, on the solvency contention, doesn't your first solvency author assume this set of alternatives as opposed to what you're talking about over here on harm contention? Well, no, maybe, blah, blah, blah. Okay, then, and you launch into a speech on how the solvency cards don't support the actual plan, therefore, blah, 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 and what have you done? You've wasted about 8 questions worth of time. And the judge in the back of the room is thinking, not capitalizing on their opportunity for direct confrontation here. Love the sound of their own voice. Want to make a speech. Don't do it. Ask questions. Get information out. And sometimes, folks, we're going to talk about this in a little more detail later, the more questions you ask, the more likely that some kind of a concession will come out of the mouth of the witness that they don't want to make. And especially if they're short of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And especially if they're focused in particular areas of the case, like the weakest part of the case. We'll talk specifically about how to do that in a little bit. Ask questions, don't make speeches. Number three, be organized. Be organized. We strive for organization in debate. If you jump from the first observation over to the solvency contention, back to the plan, back up to the observation, back to the solvency contention, you are confusing the judge's sheet in the back of the room, and your job is to persuade that judge, which means you need to keep the judge's flow sheet organized. It is much better to go in order or to isolate a part that you're going to and say, I want to start by asking a few questions about the plan, boom, 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 boom. It's usually where you start. We want concessions. They don't want to tell us anything. But be organized. Suggestion number four. Pursue a line of questioning to its logical conclusion, and then stop. Pursue a line of questioning to its logical conclusion, and then stop. Great, another rocket science suggestion. Let me tell you something, folks. This is what Judge Younger says is a classic error in the courtroom, and I'm telling you it's a classic error in the debate room. And I'm going to use his example to illustrate the point. Let's say that I am the prosecuting, I'm the defense attorney, and I've got the prosecutor's big witness on the stand. We're going to make an analogy between the trial process and the debate process. Cross-examination in the trial is just like it is in the debate. It's designed to attack the foundation of argument, the evidence the other side has. What's the foundation of argument? Evidence. We're going to attack that foundation. In this case, it's the witness's testimony. The idea is that I will take information gotten from that cross-examination and I will use it before the jury in my summation speech to get my client off the hook, and he has to pay me lots of money when he gets off the hook. Okay, I've got the witness on the stand, and this is how the exchange goes. You claim to have seen the accident in which my client was allegedly involved. I'd like to know what time of day or night the accident occurred. Well, it was about midnight, maybe a little after that. Okay. How far physically in distance were you from the accident? I was about, let's see, it was a mile, maybe a mile and a half. Thank you. I can't help but notice that your glasses resemble the bottom of Coke bottles. Do you have a vision problem? Well, yeah, I'm blind, and I think it's 34 of the states now, you know, legally. Thank you. Stop. done. You have all the information you need. Before the jury, you go, hello, this is Lee Withers, the guy as blind as that. Okay, he's a mile and a half from the accident, and dead or dying, you cannot, I believe, reasonable doubt here, is an understatement. Okay? But no. You can't do that. See, that would be the easy thing, see? But you can't help yourself. How could you possibly have seen the accident? Well, I'm a bird watcher, and I was in a tree, and the pair of high-powered binoculars, and it happened under a streetlight, so I saw the whole thing. Now, ask your questions up to a logical point, and then stop. Well, Melissa, what about truth? This is debate to establish truth. Well, no, not really. Another dirty little fact here, but we've got to come clean here about some of this stuff. And the bottom line is, it at least takes time in someone's speech to have to explain that away. If you stop in cross-examination, you have immediately reduced the credibility of this witness in the eyes of the judge. So when that explanation comes, it may or may not be persuasive, but it will certainly be less persuasive on a credibility level because you stopped where you were supposed to stop and didn't give in to that temptation to go one step further that you should not have gone.